No-nonsense nutrition, always stimulated by all the seminars that I go to. Well, this one was the seminar that I taught. Yep, I just came back from Dallas. It's the DD month. I was in Denver a month ago and now Dallas. Only I got to teach this time instead of attending the class. And I have to tell you, the first thing that impressed the heck out of me in Dallas was their phenomenal arboretum. I went in there a day early with a buddy so that I could visit their botanical gardens and arboretum, and it was really stunning. But what was also stunning was seeing the incredible loss of plant life that has happened in Texas as a result of the drought. The fact that people can deny that the weather is changing is really astounding when you see these big, great, fabulous trees that have taken such a hit. And if Dallas gets another ice storm this winter like they got it last winter, they're going to have a big cleanup project on their hands. But the clinicians in Dallas were very enthusiastic. They were very up on their literature as well. And I was there to talk about the fact that the road to health is paved with good intestines. You heard it right. The road to health is paved with good intestines. Yeah, it's, you know, oftentimes here on No Nonsense Nutrition, I talk about what's going in. We don't talk about what's going out. But every living system, it doesn't matter whether it's a cell or an organ or a whole body or, for that matter, a whole community of people, has two fundamental capacities: to bring in substances that provide energy and sustenance and to remove waste. It's an inevitable consequence of human biology that being alive means waste is generated within the body. And it's also a fact of life that we're exposed to innumerable substances, both beneficial and detrimental, simply by breathing, eating a meal, walking through the yard, lying in bed. There's all kinds of substances present in our food, in our air, in the blankets, in the water, in the carpet, in the walls, and everything that surrounds us. Therefore, it's really important that our body can differentiate between the good and the bad in the environment. It's essential that the body identify the substances that are necessary to maintain health and take those substances into circulation where they can nourish our cells and our body and keep out the damaging materials. So in order to accomplish that, the body has to have protection. It has to have defense system in place. It has to have healthy transportation and circulation functions, and it has to have optimal elimination of waste. When we realize that the average person can consume 25 tons of food in a lifetime, 25 tons of food. But what's on that food? You know, when we realize that over 1 billion, that's billion with a B, pounds of pesticides are applied in the United States alone, and over 6 billion, getting close to 7 billion pounds of pesticides are applied worldwide. They're everywhere in our environment, and they can be found in the home, in the garden, and on grocery foods. And even eating an organic diet can't fully eliminate your exposure to pesticides. We know that pesticide exposure is related to a number of conditions. I've talked many times on No Nonsense Nutrition about the relationship of pesticides to Parkinson's disease, to asthma, even to hypothyroidism. But we know now that pesticides are related to several kinds of cancer, from non-Hodgkin's lymphoma to leukemia, to from multiple myeloma to prostate, pancreas, lung, ovary, breast, testes, liver, kidney. Lots of different cancers that can be provoked by pesticides. So even pharmaceutical drugs have been found in measurable levels in rivers and drinking waters and in sediments. Drugs that come out unmetabolized through the urine and make it into the water supply. You know, these toxic exposures are costing us a lot of money. There was a study that was done. It was 10 years ago, so I'm sure these numbers are very out of date, but it talked about the fact that treating environmentally related conditions of health costs us somewhere in the neighborhood of $400 billion a year. So our body's ability to protect us against these damaging substances are part of what digestion and absorption is all about. But, you know, pesticides and these other external pollutants really aren't the only dangers that enter our system. It's also true that some people are intolerant of the foods themselves. Food allergies alone, and remember, an allergy is immediate, where a sensitivity is delayed. You know, they talk about the fact that this only affects a couple percent of people worldwide, but that isn't what I see in my practice. I see individuals that can eat a food and it can make them swell up like a pig, as they say in the South. They get edema. I've had people who get irregular heart rhythms from eating foods that they're reactive to. They can get canker sores or diarrhea, get gas and indigestion and irritable bowel syndrome. I have a client that can eat the wrong food and have bedwetting happen. We don't think of that in an adult. Ear infections, seizures, anxiety, depression, memory loss, arthritis. It's a really, really big list. From itchy skin to migraine headaches, food allergy intolerance can account for a really diverse range of symptoms. So all of this is happening on the stage that we call digestion. When we look at the digestive process, it's really to separate individual nutrients from that complicated plate of food that you just ate. You know, when we eat proteins and fats and carbs, fiber, water, vitamins and minerals, that's pretty much the list. But these protein, fats and carbs, that matrix of food that each of us eat has tremendous variety. There's lots of different kinds of proteins, and of course everything that grows out of the ground is a carbohydrate. People still think carbs mean rice and potatoes and cookies and flour, but in fact, carb means anything that ever grew out of the ground. You know that little hook that I put out on a regular basis saying, what are the two carbohydrates that do not grow out of the ground? This is your trivia question. There's only two, honey and lactose, the sugar that's in milk. Otherwise, all carbs are just plants. But even if you choose the proper diet, and I know there's a lot of no-nonsense nutrition listeners out there that are really making an effort. They're buying organic and they're fixing their own food and they're making a plate of rainbow colors and they're doing everything they can to be healthy, but once the food is ingested, it's got to be properly digested in order for the nutrients to be absorbed. You know, the first thing we do is ingest. That's chew our food. You know, mama said chew your food until it was liquid. Well, what mama should have said is chew your starches. The whole reason that we chew our meat is just to keep from choking on it. What's true is that we only have to chew our starches, our corn on the cob, our baked potato, our piece of toast, because the enzyme that's in our mouth only works on starch. The enzymes that really start doing the big job are the enzymes in our belly, the enzymes in our stomach. That's where proteins begin to be digested into amino acids. I gave an example at the lunch meeting last week at my clinic. And I said, digestion is a lot like a paragraph. A paragraph has got numerous sentences and lots of words and hundreds of letters. And so if I took a paragraph and I cut each of the sentences apart, took a pair of scissors to that paragraph on a piece of paper and just made those sentences all individual, that's the beginning of protein digestion. That's what happens in your stomach. And then if I took those sentences and I cut the words individually, that's a second stage of protein digestion. We render proteins down into something called polypeptides, mini protein links. And then ultimately, I took those words and I cut apart each of the letters. Then we have taken a protein, the paragraph, and broken it all the way down into amino acids, the letters. That digestion is really critical digestion, because without protein, you can't build and maintain tissue. Protein is the building blocks because of its magic ingredient, nitrogen. Anything that contains nitrogen is a builder. That's the reason that I say that vegetarians can't be successful vegetarians without beans, because beans are the only member of the plant kingdom that really has any substantial amount of nitrogen in it. So you can't build tissue unless you've got nitrogen. So as we digest these proteins, from a paragraph to letters, or from proteins to amino acids, at the same time, we're taking carbohydrates and we're reducing them down into glucose. Glucose is the end product. It doesn't make any difference whether we're eating a potato or we're eating a cookie. Ultimately, if it's made out of carbohydrates, if it's made out of plant foods, it's going to be reduced down into glucose. And we need glucose for energy. That's fundamentally what our body runs on. We need glucose in order to think. If we don't have enough glucose, we feel, well, stupid. Because our brain isn't getting enough fuel. And we digest fats at the same time. Fats aren't digested in the mouth. They're not even digested in the stomach. Fats really get completely digested in the small intestine. And those fats make up the membranes of our cells more than any other thing. There's other things that fats do in the body, but I'm going to concentrate on that. So proteins to build and maintain tissue. And also, proteins make every hormone in your body, every enzyme in your body, every neurotransmitter in your body, every antibody in your body. They're all made by proteins. So each of these nutrients must be slowly released and absorbed in the bloodstream. And they can only be absorbed in the bloodstream when they reduce down into these small constituents. You don't have little pieces of egg and toast floating around in your bloodstream now after you ate your breakfast. You do not have little pieces of oatmeal floating around in your bloodstream. You only have the glucose, the fatty acids, and the amino acids that have been broken down in the digestive process and then absorbed through the gut wall into the bloodstream, sent to the liver, and then the liver sends these molecules, these small units, out into the body for use for all of these different functions. Well, things can interfere with that. Antacids is an example. Antacids can inhibit the digestion of proteins. And as a result, they can cause food allergies. Well, if somebody has heartburn, and it's funny that we called it heartburn because it doesn't really have anything to do with your heart. It just happens to be in the part of your chest that is near your heart. I like what the Chinese call it, which is rebellious fire blazing upward, because rebellious fire blazing upward is more accurate than heartburn. You watch television and you see all these ads for proton pump inhibitors and H2 blockers and all of these drugs that have to do with reducing stomach acid. What happens when we reduce stomach acid is we create another problem downstream, because the fundamental function of stomach acid is to purify your food, to sterilize your food so that bad critters that came in on that salad get killed. And so when you take antacids and proton pump inhibitors and other things that stop or inhibit the digestion of protein, you can cause another problem downstairs. You know, stomach acid decreases with age anyway. It's a condition called hypochlorhydria. And we know that this lack of stomach acid is much more common than excess stomach acid. But there's lots of people out there and they're popping one of those drugstore pills to give themselves permission to eat that pepperoni pizza that otherwise would make them hurt. Well, that's a pretty dumb strategy overall. The presence and the secretion of adequate amounts of specific digestive enzymes is really essential for healthy digestion and absorption of nutrients. And a lack of any of these enzymes can not only have local effects, it can have systemic effects. And so we don't ever want to do anything to suppress that digestion. Well, there's a lot of people listening to No Nonsense Nutrition right now, and you're taking a pill every day. Maybe you're taking the purple pill. You're taking some kind of pill every day to stop the production of stomach acid, and you say, Eve, I hurt if I don't take it. Well, the irony is probably 90% of you that are taking any of those kinds of drugs actually have too little acid. And so when I tell people we need to add to the acid instead of stop the acid, they look at me like I'm from Mars. And yet when people use the old folk remedy of having some apple cider vinegar at the end of their meal, may not be the best cocktail in the world to finish your meal off with, but when you take a tablespoon of apple cider vinegar, it makes your stomach more acid. And when it makes your stomach more acid, the primary enzyme of digestion in the stomach, which is called pepsin, can work. Pepsin can only work in an acid environment. So if you took an antacid or you took one of those acid blocker type drugs, your pepsin, your primary enzyme of protein digestion can't work. And you know, if you don't break down your protein, one of the first problems that happens is stinky gas. And I'm talking, woo, baby, stinky gas. Everybody has gas. It's a natural and normal part of digestion. But I'm talking about the gas where you don't want to be in the room with yourself. I still laugh and think back of the client that came to me years ago. And when I said, what problem are we here to treat? And he said, we don't have any wallpaper in our bathroom. And if you get the joke, then you're giggling now, because that's how bad his gas was. And he had been taking one of these stomach acid blocker products. And so some of you might say, well, I had an endoscopy and my doctor told me that I should go on this drug. Well, that's true, but those drugs are designed to be used for 2 to 8 weeks. They're not designed to be used forever and ever. Amen. What we found out is that those inhibiting drugs also inhibit the laying down of new bone. We used to think that when people took those stomach acid suppressor drugs, that the reason that it affected their bone is because they weren't able to absorb their minerals. Minerals are broken down out of your food in an acid environment. And so again, if your stomach isn't acid enough, you can't break all your minerals out. Well, that's true. But it turns out these drugs have a direct effect on the bone, and that's the reason that people that have been on PPIs, these proton pump inhibitors, for longer than a year, and certainly up into the 5 to 7 years is not uncommon for me to see with clients that come into my clinic, they increase their risk of fracture of the wrist, fracture of the spine, and fracture of the hip as a result of taking these drugs. And you might say, well, Eve, I have Barrett's esophagitis. I have been diagnosed by my gastroenterologist with a procedure called an endoscopy with this condition called Barrett's esophagitis, and I'm supposed to be taking these drugs for the rest of my life. Well, there was a study that was released in the last month that said the number of people that have Barrett's that actually go on to create an esophageal cancer are very, very small. Doesn't mean the risk isn't there. It just means it's very, very low. But once again, some individuals, that valve that's right there at the top of the stomach, at the bottom of the esophagus, is sloppy. It doesn't close well enough. And one of the things that affects that valve a lot is the painkiller ibuprofen. Very many people who've had an ulcer or gastritis diagnosed know they're not supposed to take aspirin. And so they switch over and they take ibuprofen instead, and ibuprofen can cause that valve to be sloppy and stay open. And then during your sleep, that stomach acid splashes back up into the esophagus. Chocolate will make that valve stay open. Wine can make that valve stay open. For some people, tomatoes and citrus are trouble. So when they recommend to people that they elevate the head of their bed 4 inches, so that acid can't ever slide back up the esophagus, that doesn't really change the fact that that valve still doesn't shut correctly. So avoiding tomatoes, citrus, wine, chocolate, and ibuprofen after the sun goes down is probably a really good idea, so that by the time that you lay flat in the bed, you're not going to have a problem with that acid slipping back up into the esophagus or potentially into the lung, creating breathing problems, into the throat, creating hoarseness, or even, I know it sounds gross, up into the sinuses, where individuals can end up with chronic sinusitis as a result of gastric reflux. It's called GERD, gastroesophageal reflux disease. It's a much fancier, bigger range of symptoms than heartburn is alone. But I'm here to tell you, in my clinic, two-thirds of the people that walk in that are on one of these proton pump inhibitors or histamine blocker drugs. It's a particular kind of antihistamine for the stomach. It's not the same antihistamine that works on your nose, but H2, histamine receptor site number 2, is worked on by another set of drugs that you can find at the drugstore. Individuals that are taking these drugs on a regular basis, two-thirds of them are going to eliminate their need for drugs when they take things that actually add more acid. So whether they're taking a tablespoon of apple cider vinegar after a meal or taking the product called bitters. If you're a bartender and you make a Manhattan, you know you pick up that little tiny bottle of bitters. And that is a plant called green gentian. And those bitters, if you give about 3 shakes into a little snort of water and you drink that at the beginning of the meal, that will help to create more stomach acid and assist your digestion. One of the things that I learned when I was living in Arizona and working with some of the population of northern Arizona that were Native Americans was I worked in places on the reservation where there was no money. I don't mean there was a little bit of money. There was no money. And we had to come up with remedies that were really inexpensive. And so things like apple cider vinegar and bitters were things that we could use. But at the health food store, you would buy a pill called betaine hydrochloride. Betaine hydrochloride is not hydrochloric acid. You couldn't possibly take hydrochloric acid because you'd sear your skin. But when you take betaine hydrochloric acid and you do that immediately after a meal, it will help to acidify the stomach so the pepsin can work better and you can digest your proteins. Carbohydrates, on the other hand, can also cause a lot of flatulence and burping for individuals that don't have enough of the enzymes from their pancreas that digest carbohydrates. I told you starches start their digestion in the mouth, but all your carbohydrates, it doesn't matter whether it was the blueberries and blackberries and raspberries and papaya that I just had for breakfast and the yogurt that went with it, or it was the broccoli soup that I made last night. The idea is that when your body goes to digest carbohydrates, it has to have a lot of a very special enzyme called amylase. When we make it in the mouth, we call it salivary amylase, and when we make it in the pancreas, we call it pancreatic amylase. In either case, it's what breaks down these carbohydrates into their end stage, which is glucose. And so that is what gives us energy. You know, when people have hypoglycemia, an inability to control their blood sugar well, and their blood sugar drops too low, your body will actually take the sugar away from the frontal lobe of your brain. You know, just like in hypothermia. When you get cold, your body shunts the blood away from your fingers and toes and your nose in order to keep your core warm so you don't die of freezing. Well, when you are low in glucose, your body will shunt the glucose away from the frontal lobe of the brain to keep the other parts of your body working. And so people who have hypoglycemia will talk about the fact that they feel like somebody pulled a plug out of their toe and all their energy drained out on the carpet, that all of a sudden their energy sinks. Literally, they don't have the fuel to burn. Some people will complain of a headache, other a pain in the pit of their stomach, a gnawing that they know they need to eat. But repeatedly I've heard from people who are hypoglycemic that all of a sudden their brain doesn't work. 2+... What was the question? They just can't think. And that's absolutely true. They've described something accurately, because if we don't have enough glucose floating around in our bloodstream, we can't think. So having carbs in the diet adequately is going to help us not only have the energy to walk across the room, to blink, to carry on a conversation, but also to think. And we know that too much of anything is also trouble. And so too much carbs, we know, just adds pounds. Just like too much protein can create gout and arthritis and cancers. Too much carbs can create too much belly. When we look at the digestion of fats fundamentally takes place in the small intestine. Very little action in the mouth, hardly any action in the stomach. 99% of the action is all taking place in the small intestine via the lipase enzymes that come from the pancreas. You know that the prefix LIP is not lip like the opening of your mouth, but the prefix for lipids or fats, just like when you hear the term liposuction, that you're talking about fat sucking in a plastic surgery environment. And so lipids are digested by lipases, enzymes that work specifically on fat. And when we break down these fats into their constituent fatty acids and such, then we are able to use those things in order to make our cell walls and in order to make all of the hormones that are in our body. I said proteins make our hormones, but they're built on a particular kind of waxy fat known as cholesterol. Yeah, a lot of people don't realize that cholesterol has very good function. You know, if we took all the cholesterol out of our body, we wouldn't have a brain. We would be able to run for public office at that point. Sorry, that was an editorial comment. So when we look at the presence of fats that are in the diet and our ability to digest those fats, some people don't do a very good job of that. They get really burpy. You know, burpy, 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 burpy. That's often a gallbladder symptom. You know, your gallbladder is that little pocketbook, I call it, right underneath your liver on the right side, underneath your rib cage, and it stores bile, that bitter yellow material that is produced by the liver and sent to the gallbladder to be stored, helps to emulsify the fats in your digestion. Emulsify, the best example I can give is if you have a greasy plate and you put it into hot soapy water, then it emulsifies the fat off the plate, and then the enzymes can work on them. So bile helps to separate the fats out of the rest of the mass of food that's coming out of the stomach one teaspoon at a time, because the pyloric valve at the bottom of the stomach won't let food be released until it's little teeny tiny, little teeny tiny. A lot of people don't realize that your stomach chews your food, that mechanically it mashes and crashes and squishes and makes all the molecules a certain size. Size does matter. It does matter to the small intestine. And so if the pyloric valve reads the fact that the pieces in the stomach are still too big, it won't open that trap door and let those foods move down into the small intestine. So when people can't digest their fats well, a lot of times they're burping, and they're burping after a meal, and they're tasting the food that they ate, and they're actually having that yellow bitter bile come up into their throat or into their mouth. We know that people should pay attention to the amount of saturated fat that they eat. The biggest source of saturated fat in the American diet is still beef, but it's all this fried jive that's out there. You know, fried this and fried that. You just do not know how gnarly the ingredients are that come in oils that have been heated to 400 degrees and left there for hours like they are in restaurants. Even if they change that oil every single solitary day, the way that those oils get transferred into carcinogenic compounds when they're heated and kept at high temperatures for a long time, you don't even want to know what they do to your cells. They can definitely change the membrane surface and create an interface in your cells that leads to more diabetes. Not something that we need. You know, water-soluble nutrients like vitamin B and vitamin C are absorbed in a different way from fat-soluble substances like vitamin E and vitamin A. Water-soluble vitamins are absorbed in the small intestine. Fat-soluble vitamins, after they get emulsified by the bile and worked on by the lipase enzymes, they get taken up into the lymphatic system. So people who have swollen lymph glands on a regular basis don't always have infection. Sometimes they have congested lymph because they're eating too much fat. So whether it's too much butter or too much ice cream or too much fried, doesn't make any difference. The idea is if you've got lymph nodes that are tender, you can feel them, whether they're up underneath your jaw or they're in your armpit or they're in your groin or anywhere else in the body. It's telling you that you are getting too many fats in the diet, too many gnarly fats in the diet. And so when we begin to respect the fact that this digestive process is this complex, anytime this digestive process doesn't work, we should be paying attention to it. And we should be paying attention to the end product. You know, one of the few report cards that we get every day is that report card that we get when we eliminate waste. But, you know, it doesn't make very good cocktail party conversation. We turn it into lots of toilet jokes, but we don't realize that the metabolization of nutrients that results in waste is what allowed you to get up out of bed this morning, allows you to listen to this show, allows you to do all of the things that you want to do. You know, we excrete waste products, solid, liquid, and gas. And when we get rid of those waste products, we let the body work better. If we keep those waste products in our body, we are recycling dirty water. And I do mean dirty water. In order to deliver fuel to the cell and subsequently remove these waste products, we need to tip our hat to the metabolism of the body. We don't pay attention to this until something goes wrong. As soon as we've got a bellyache, as soon as we've got heartburn, as soon as we're bloated, as soon as we're constipated, as soon as we have diarrhea, suddenly it's important. And it should be important long before then. I don't think there would be 700 laxatives sold in America today unless constipation was a real problem. You know, it was interesting. I asked the class when I was in Dallas what was the definition of constipation, and one person said less than one bowel movement a day, and somebody else said dry, hard, or dark stool. Somebody else said putting out marbles as a waste product. Well, all of those things are result of constipation, but actually constipation is when we lose the muscular tonality of the lower part of the large intestine. And we do that oftentimes by delaying. You know, I had a client and she worked for one of the evil empire companies, and her job was to work at a cash register for 4 hours without a break. So even if she got what we call in the health field the call to stool, she couldn't leave the cash register. She had to hold it. Well, when you get the urge and you hold it, and you get the urge and you hold it, and you do that repeatedly, ultimately the body quits sending the urge. And so those muscles don't work right to allow the relaxation that is necessary for somebody to have an effective bowel movement. And that's really where the beginning of constipation is. And so when we look at how do we resolve that problem, well, we've got to create more pressure in the bowel in order to have a good bowel movement. We create more pressure by having plenty of fiber in the diet. You know, when we talk about fiber, we're not just talking about drinking a drink that has something stirred into it or taking a capsule. What we're talking about is the fibers that occur naturally in our food. We've got two fundamental kinds of fiber, soluble fiber and insoluble fiber. And soluble fiber, as it sounds, actually swells up with water. And when I suggest to people that they increase the amount of fiber that they get in their diet, that's simple enough for individuals that are eating a lot of fruits and vegetables, because fruits and vegetables have a good bit of fiber, and we can, just by getting 9 servings in a day, probably get all the fiber that we need. But very many people are not getting a sufficient amount of fiber in their diet, and they need to take something supplementally, because when that pressure increases in the bowel, that's what allows us to have a good bowel movement every day. And so fiber supplements are one of the places to start, but not unless you're completely hydrated. You know, I see so many people that are dehydrated in our practice. As we age, we lose some of the sensitivity for thirst. And so this morning when I got out of bed, I drank a full glass of water as soon as my feet hit the floor. When you get adequate water all through the day and you do it on a clock, you don't drink water when you're thirsty. You drink a glass of water when you get up, and you drink a glass of water when you exercise, and you drink a glass of water as soon as you come home, and you drink a glass of water before you eat your lunch, and you habituate to time. Your body's recycling that water repeatedly. And if your belly isn't eliminating well, you're recycling dirty water. But we need fiber, and we need water, and we need stimulation. You know, I warn people against using products that contain senna leaf and cascara when they're constipated. While it's true that senna and cascara will both cause a bowel to move, they do so by a process of irritation. Now, if somebody got stopped up to their ears because they went on vacation and got their schedule all wonky and were eating weird foods and they took senna or cascara one time, I wouldn't lose any sleep about it. But I often see people in my practice, probably once a month, that somebody comes in that's taking a tea that contains Cascara Sagrada, and they're taking it every single day. They don't realize that over time they're going to actually continue to irritate their bowel and make their problem worse. I recommend magnesium citrate oftentimes as a way to get a bowel to move. Mag citrate draws water into the bowel, and in drawing water increases the pressure, and so as a result people have a good BM. I still don't recommend that to be used on a regular basis. We want to solve the underlying problem of the constipation, the imbalance that's going on. We need probiotics. We need those good guy bacteria, especially lactobacillus. And people say, well, I eat yogurt. Isn't that enough? No, not always. You know, oftentimes the lactobacillus that is found in the yogurt is Lactobacillus plantarum. It's from plants. It's not a human species. And so while it does us benefit, it still isn't enough to get a bowel regular. We need activity. You know, one of the very difficult problems that happen when individuals are wheelchair bound or people are limited by injury or disease process is they don't get any stimulation to the large muscles of the legs, and the stimulation to the large muscles of the thighs actually helps to stimulate the peristalsis or the movement of the bowel. And so individuals that are wheelchair bound often require regular stimulation through herbs and other nutrients in order to keep that bowel happy. When we look at this report card that we get every single day, what we're trying to do is make sure you don't end up with migraines, and you don't end up with itchy skin, and you don't end up with blemishes, and you don't end up with mood disorders. If your belly doesn't feel good, you don't feel good. You get grumpy. And then you get in fights. And then you get a lousy day. And all of that thing happens as a result of the fact that your belly doesn't work well. So the same thing is true with diarrhea. When somebody has diarrhea, there ain't anything on their mind except how close is the next bathroom. The one kind of diarrhea you never want to stop is the watery diarrhea. If you ever get diarrhea and all you've got is water coming out, don't try to stop it. Don't go to the drugstore and buy that magic pill that stops it, but you're just going to lengthen the whole procedure for cleaning out the pipes. That's the only time I don't want to stop it. If it's pasty, yeah, I'll give you something to stop it. I use immunoglobulins that help to bind up bad bacteria, because the majority of diarrhea, and I would say somewhere in the two-thirds neighborhood, is nothing more than spoiled food. People leave the chicken out on the kitchen counter and they come out there several hours later and they go, oh, I forgot to put this in the fridge. They don't ever think of the fact that it could have developed very rapidly growing bacteria just in that couple of hours it sat out on the counter. People eat underripe fruit. It'll give you diarrhea. When I get somebody that comes into the clinic and they say, oh, I had that 24-hour stomach flu last week. There's no such thing as a 24-hour stomach flu. You had food poisoning. So the nature of these various kinds of food poisoning, one of the recipes that I give people that have diarrhea is called rice water. You take a handful of white rice and you put it in 2 cups of water and you boil the heck out of it for 20 minutes with a lid on it with 1 pinch of salt and 1 pinch of sugar in it. So that's 1 handful of rice, 1 pinch of salt, 1 pinch of sugar, and 2 cups of water with a lid on it. Boil it like crazy for 20 minutes and then strain it and drink the water. Throw away the rice. That helps to rebalance a channel, a sodium-potassium channel in the bowel that helps to stop all this water going out. But we look at probiotics because they're one of the things that we want to put in billions and billions and billions of organisms when somebody's got constipation or diarrhea. But remember, diarrhea is your body saying, get this out of here. You don't want to stop it. And so all the moms out there that are listening, remember that when your kid's got the squirts. Pay attention to what they ate in the 24 hours before and see if you can find the origin of the problem so it doesn't happen again. Personally, I find digestion fascinating because that's obviously true. Simply because it is our digestion that enables us to do everything it is that we want to do. And makes the tissue, makes the body that we want to have. And so if something's going on in our body that we don't like, a lot of that can be changed as a result of improving and perfecting digestion. And of course, that it gets improved and perfected because you choose better in terms of your food. But this metabolism is much more complex than people realize on the surface. We don't talk about this at all. And we certainly don't talk about this enough, even for people that are interested, because it's got social taboos around it. But when we begin to look at all of the diseases that are treated, from Crohn's disease to celiac, from ulcerative colitis to pancreatitis, from fatty liver to gallbladder disease, from gastroparesis to heartburn, we realize that if it wasn't for all of the digestive diseases, we would not have television, because we would not have any ability to have all those commercials if it wasn't for all the things that are used. And it tells us how much people are suffering that a company would go out and spend millions of dollars on an ad to get rid of any of those complaints. The problem is we don't get rid of them. All we do is alleviate the symptom. And alleviating the symptom is not the same thing as eliminating the problem. That's going to take some research. And yes, there are all kinds of critters that can grow in the bowel. There are bacteria and parasites and yeast. I do a good bit of stool studies in my practice, and I find out that people have unwelcome guests living in that plumbing. And sometimes we have to use kill formulas, whether they're botanical kill formulas or whether they're pharmaceutical kill formulas, to get rid of the imbalance that's going on in the digestive tract. But if you ever want to know who runs your life, I'm here to tell you, your digestion runs your life. And so working to improve your food choices is really the beginning of taking a better care of your bowel. You know, I talked before on an earlier No Nonsense Nutrition show about the fact that this time of the year, October and November, is broccoli season. I mean, this is where you get the best price on it and the most beautiful broccoli. Broccoli is a cool weather plant, rather. October, November are peak broccoli season. So last night I made a broccoli soup. I sauteed a big onion in a little bit of olive oil, and then I cut up a peeled white tomato, all organic, of course. Let that cook a while, and then I cut in all the broccoli stems into that, let that cook a little while longer, and then I put in all the broccoli flour. There was only 1 cup of water in there. I added 1 cup of milk to it as it was completing its cooking phase, and then I took all that stuff and put it in a food processor and pureed it and put it back in the pan and put in a cup of reduced fat sharp cheddar cheese and make a broccoli cheese soup last night for dinner with a nice big salad. It was delicious and had all that good fiber in there. So, you know, you can have your cake and eat it too. You can have really delicious food and healthy too. When I hear people say, oh, health food is boring, they don't know what they're talking about. So remember this author, and I don't know this author, but any author who's written a cookbook, I've got admiration for. But the author, Ellie Topp, is going to be at Bookstore One Sarasota at 6 to 7 tonight with tastings of recipes from her book and discussions about healthy eating. So 6 to 7 o'clock, you're not doing anything, boogie over to Bookstore One on Main Street and learn a little bit more about healthy eating.